Thank you for performing in KSUT's virtual Pagosa Folk and Bluegrass Festival this Friday.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad I was able to do it.
Your new album, Good Souls, Better Angels, is probably the most political of your 15 albums, but you've been an active protester throughout your life, if not overtly obvious in your songwriting, at least in your real life.
Mm-hmm.
What was the writing process like on this record?
Well, you know, they were written over a period of, you know, at different times. For instance, that song Bone of Contention, I actually did record it, but didn't release it back when I was working on my Little Honey album, which is the one right after West. And for whatever reason, you know, it didn't make the album, which happens sometimes with songs. And, of course, you know, we remembered, you know, that we had that song, that I had that song, and brought it back in and re-recorded it for this album, and it sounds like I could have written it yesterday. It fits perfectly. And, you know, so some of them I have little bits and pieces of, and that's usually my writing process is, you know, then I'm always thinking of things and writing lines down, and, you know, I save everything. And then when I sit down to actually apply myself and work on stuff, then I get all that out. I drag all those notes out and songs. And I've got like a briefcase where, you know, I've got different stuff in different stages of being finished. And so I just kind of, you know, chip away at them. You know, and other times I'll sit down and write something and it'll almost get finished, like, right then. But, yeah, I mean, there's just been so much upheaval. There have always been things to write about, you know, been things to fight about and you know, protest about. But it's just, of course, it's reached a crescendo now, you know, with the guy who's in the White House. You know, so that it definitely, I guess what I'm trying to say is while I was in that writing mode, like, okay, it's time to work on songs for the next album, you know, that period, I was definitely thinking that it was on my mind, you know, these things. But I've always been, you know, maybe a little bit in a more subtle way, but when you look back, like at my Blessed album, even that song Blessed, you know, is it's about, you know, it deals with humanity. And my song Born to be Loved, you know, you weren't born to suffer. You weren't born to be a slave. You were born to be loved, you know. And then I have a song called Soldier Song, which a lot of people don't remember. It's kind of more, I guess, one of my more obscure songs now. I don't perform it that much because it's so dark. But called Soldier Song, and it's really it's an anti-war song, but it's a little more subtle. But so I was starting to, you know, do that a little bit before this. You know, this just has a few more songs that are more in your face, I guess, which is really fun to do and great to sing and great to, I can't wait to get out and do this stuff live because it feels, you know, it's very empowering to write and sing this kind of stuff.
Was it cathartic to write and record these songs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very cathartic. Well, it always is for me, you know, when I write. That's why I write to begin with, you know, because I'm an artist first and foremost. So I'm writing from the deepest parts of myself, and I get it out on paper, and then I, you know, the next phase is to get it to the people, you know, and have it translate to everybody, you know, and hope that they get something from it. But anyway, yeah, this was a different, I guess the period that I was writing in was, you know, everybody knows how difficult things have been, you know, and we're all in this together. We're all feeling it. You know, that's what feels good about writing these kind of songs. And I can remember, you know, back in I was a teenager, you know, in the 60s, and I was very active and in demonstrations and the protests, and very involved in the anti-war, you know, protests when we were in Vietnam and everything. And I can remember that feeling of solidarity, you know, when you would be with people on the street marching. And
didn't you get into some trouble in high school when you were 15 or 16 over a protest?
Yeah. Well, I was, you know, I didn't say, we had this, I don't know if the school still do it, but back then when, you know, you're in homeroom and the Pledge of Allegiance would come out over the intercom system and you had to stand up, you know, from your desk and say the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, put your hand over your heart and everything. That was the routine thing every day before classes started. So I did my, it was like a little silent protest that I did for myself where I would stand up, but I wouldn't say it, you know, but nobody knew, nobody could tell. Then one day I got sent to the principal's office with a couple of the other kids because we were passing out SDS leaflets on campus, you know, with Students for Democratic Society. I went to this, you know, inner city, overcrowded, understaffed high school with a racist principal. So some of the students had organized and were, you know, had a list of grievances and demands that we were presenting to the school. And, you know, things would happen like a black kid and a white kid would get into a fight, and the black kid would get sent home, and the white kid wouldn't, you know, that kind of thing. It was pretty blatant. And so anyway, you know, we got sent to the office, and while we were in the assistant principal's office, we all three agreed not to say the Pledge of Allegiance when it came out over the intercom system. And so then the assistant principal asked us, you know, did you say it? Did you say it? No, no. And we were definitely suspended for that. And so then I got home, and my dad, who is, you know, very progressive in his thinking, and he said, honey, don't worry about it. We'll get you an ACLU lawyer. And he did that, and I got back into school on the grounds that it was unconstitutional. Woo-hoo!
Brave move for a teenager.
Yeah, I was very passionate about all these things, and still am.
And these songs have been building up then for over 50 years. They just weren't ready to escape yet.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, I wanted to be able to, it's harder to write a really good topical song. You know, I prefer to call them topical songs as opposed to protest songs, just because it covers a wider area, I think. And actually, really, I a lot of them that they're not obviously protests or topical songs, but they're songs about humanity, you know. And to me, that's it falls under the same spectrum. As, you know, whenever you're talking about, you know, the people, the world in general, how people relate and everything, as opposed to an unrequited love song, you know, like I'm in love with somebody and he left me and, you know, I feel horrible and, you know, that kind of thing. Those kinds of songs for me, and I think most songwriters would agree, are easier to write, you know. And that's mainly what I've been writing about, which makes sense because that's what you're going through, you know, when you're younger and everything. And, you know, you're exploring the world and all this stuff's happening to you, and it's all about me, you know. but, you know, the songs that, the topical songs that I grew up listening to were so good, like the stuff that Bob Dylan wrote back in the 60s, Masters of War, which is a song I've loved and been doing ever since I heard it on one of his albums. And, you know, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. I mean, you know, so, and, you know, then later Neil Young's, you know, Keep on Rocking in the Free World. That's one of the all-time best ones, you know, because it's got such a great refrain. And we perform it, my band and I do that song a lot of times at the end of the night, you know, and everybody, you know, has their fists in the air and everything. But I just find them harder to write, you know, and so I guess I had to build up to it. But I've always explored, like I said, you know, the humanitarian, I don't know what the better word for it is, because usually there's kind of a, when you say protest song, people usually think, where have all the flowers gone, that beautiful song that, you know, Pete Seeger wrote, and or We Shall Overcome, great civil rights song, you know, those kinds of songs. But there are different ways to write them. But, you know, another thing, another part of this is, too, that, you know, when I met my husband, who's my soulmate, you know, I realized, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to start branching out here. I can't keep writing unrecorded love songs for the rest of my life, you know. And there was a real turning point because I've been wanting to do that anyway. You know, and it was, you know, like a big dose of reality, like, okay, I'm with someone now. I'm in a committed relationship. I'm going to be with this person the rest of my life. You know, I've got to explore some other subjects. And then Tom started working with me a little bit on some things, you know, so that, which was great, you know, because that just, you know, broadened the horizons.
The two of you, you guys wrote a lot of the songs together on the new album.
Yeah. Well, the process would be, you know, Tom's always been interested in creative writing and everything, you know, in a quiet way. I didn't even know a lot about that until after we'd been together for a while. You know, he was real shy about it. But, you know, I would be working on songs and he would come up, you know, and he would have like an idea, you know, for something. And he'd say, you know, he's real shy about it. He'd say, now, you don't have to use this or anything, but, you know, here's something I was thinking about. You know, he'd have some lines or something like that. And we were both a little shy about it, you know, because I never wrote with anybody, you know, I just as a general rule, I never, not that I wasn't open to it, but I just never really wrote with anybody else, you know. I tried to do it a couple of times and it just never worked out. But anyway, so, you know, I would look at it, I would say, yeah, okay, cool, and, you know, he would show me things, and sometimes I wasn't sure about it, and I'd say, well, I don't know about this, and, you know, but we had this really, it's a, you know, we have a healthy rapport, you know, when it comes to all that. But anyway, he started getting a little braver when I was working on the songs for this particular album. And one of the songs that he kept telling me about that he wanted, or one of the ideas that he kept telling me about, he would give me, you know, like a line and then maybe a couple of verses or something and the idea behind it. And then the process would be I would sit with it and, you know, construct it, you know, and do the editing and put all the verses together and write the melody and arrange it and everything, you know. And he was so modest about it, he would say, no, you don't have to give me credit or anything. And, you know, I would say, oh, yeah, you're going to get credit, you know. Get your publishing company set up, you know. But anyway, one of the songs was Man Without a Soul. You know, that was Tom's baby, you know, and he kept pushing for that. He goes, man without a soul, man without a soul. And at first I said, I don't know, you know, everybody's got a soul. And, you know, he looked at me and kind of rolled his eyes and said, well, you know, not everybody, you know. And I said, well, I said, yeah, but remember that the Neil Young song where he goes, even Richard Nixon has got soul,
right.
You know, And Tom said, well, look, just look at it as an expression, you know. You don't have to take it literally, you know. And so we kind of went around and around a little bit about that one. But then I finally upset and started working on it, came up with something, and, you know. And it's you know, it's right in your face. Yeah. It's not going to please everybody, that's for sure.
How has the reception been from your fans on this one? Or have you been able to gauge it? Because you've been locked up ever since this came out.
I know, but I've been doing a lot of, you know, interviews and stuff and that kind of thing. But I've also, you know, Tom sees things and, you know, I saw some stuff on Facebook recently, you know, one of them was, one of the things that happened was, there was an article in the New York Times, like a couple of weeks ago, whenever it was, and the title of it was, Where is the Soul of Donald Trump? Or something like that. I'm not sure if I'm quoting it right, but it had the word soul in it. It was something like, can we find the soul of Donald Trump? Where is the soul of Donald Trump? You know, and all that, and, you know, it was like, wow, has he heard the song? What a coincidence. And so we thought it would be cool to, you know, we posted a link to the article on my fan page and along with a link to the song, Man Without a Soul. And sure enough, here come the comments, you know, and I'm sitting in bed, you know, checking my emails and stuff. And, you know, before we go to sleep one night, and I made the mistake of seeing a couple of the comments. Now, the majority, just to answer your question, the majority of the feedback has been overly positive, you know, because most of my fans, well, I like to think the majority of my fans are of like mind. You know, you would think that. And that's what's so weird when you see some of this stuff that comes back from people who say, well, I was always a fan of Lucinda Williams, but now I don't know. Well, that was a couple of them said that. And this one guy said, you know, he says, well, I thought Lucinda Williams was a compassionate person, but because she wrote that song, Compassion. So I always thought she was a compassionate person, but this isn't compassionate. And she shouldn't be writing a song like this. And I tell you, that one really got to me because it attacked my character, you know. And Tom said, well, you know, he was actually going to respond. I didn't even think about getting into it, you know. What would be the point, you know? And, you know, everybody says, oh, don't worry about it, just brush it off, you know. But it worried me because, for one thing, you know, when Tom brought the idea to me, I said right off the bat, I don't know if I want to say something like that. Man Without a Soul, that's pretty, you know. And then I started questioning myself, you know, like, does it sound, you know, like I'm not a compassionate person because I wrote a song like that? I mean, on the other hand, you know, first of all, I'm one of the most compassionate people you'll ever meet in your life. I'm probably overly compassionate. That's part of my part of my problem, probably. But the other thing is, you know, the basic thing of it is that I wrote these songs because I care.
There's certainly a double standard that we've seen the past several decades, where if a powerful woman's musician like you or Roseanne Cash or Mary Gaucher or the Dixie Chicks make a statement, the certain element of the music listening population has a terrible reaction. But if Willie or Springsteen or Dylan or Jason Isbell do the same thing, it's a much different reaction. And that's one thing I've noticed through the years that just doesn't seem right, and the fans, for whatever reason, have a misogynist view.
That's interesting. That you see, I don't really, I can't tell that because I guess because I'm in it, I'm inside it, you know. So, you know, but I get it makes sense, you know, because the female is the docile, you know. We're supposed to be, you know, shut up and sing, you know. There's been a lot of that, but I tell you that my friend Jesse Dayton, I mean, he gets that a lot. You know, shut up and sing, because he's, you know, he's very outspoken about things, and I see people on Facebook telling him, you know, you don't need, so I think guys still get it, too, to some extent, you know, but maybe for different reasons, but there's a lot of that, you know, right now of, you know, people don't want to hear the truth. They just don't want to hear it. They want everything to be sugar-coated, you know, and I mean, I don't, you know, but that there's a lot of that, you know, like just sing, just play your music, you know, don't, you know, you see that a lot. Like, I don't want to talk about politics. I don't want to, you know, let's just look at pictures of our pets and food, you know, or something. And I loved it. I've always loved, you know, getting into the, you know, the heat of an argument or a debate, if you will. You know, I think it's healthy. You know, I'm always like with these people who don't agree with me about, you know, these Trump every so often. Look, I've got a cousin who I adore, who I found out is a Trump supporter. And I can't stand it. You know, it's like I want to talk to him and, you know, I emailed him and I asked him, I said, what? I think I sent him an article and I said, you know, how can you support this guy? And the only feedback I got was from him, well, you know, he's the president and he makes mistakes just like all presidents. He tries his best and he makes mistakes. Like, that was it. You know, I mean, you can't get these people to talk. You know, I would love to sit down with a Trump supporter and get into a debate about it. Tell me what it is. I want to know. You know, I want to pick their brain. I want to know, like, what is it? You know, but none of them will ever... You know, you can't get anything from them because it's like they don't even know.
You and Tom recently moved to Nashville and Mother Nature welcomed you with some tornado damage to the roof. And then a week or so later, we're all in lockdown due to COVID-19.
Yeah.
What? And all of this while this wonderful album is being prepped for release and seeing its release, how are you and Tom holding up?
We're doing fine, actually. I mean, like I mentioned before, I've been, you know, doing tons and tons of press, which ordinarily I wouldn't have the time to do so much of, you know. I've been, you know, getting used to doing some of the Zoom stuff and that kind of thing. And, you know, my guitar player, Stuart Mathis, and I have done some, you know, video performance things for different radio stations and different things. And so that's kept me really occupied. And, you know, ever since the album came out and right before that, it's just been, there's been a lot. European press, you know, interviews. I'm either doing interview on the phone like this, or I'm doing a Zoom interview, play songs thing. And, you know, I still, it hasn't gotten to the manic stage yet,
right,
for us, because we've been staying busy with this stuff. So, you know, it kind of just feels more like we're home in between touring kind of thing.
Well, you and the band, and I got to say, Buick Six to me is kind of like Crazy Horse is to Neil Young. They put such a gritty, greasy edge on everything you do, and it's so beautiful. But have they had the chance to fully embrace these songs and work out arrangements for how they're going to sound when you do go on tour?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we did all that, you know, when we're recording the album and all that. Stuart's in Nashville, so I have that connection with him. And which is, you know, a real blessing. David and Butch are in L.A., but, you know, I don't think any of us worry about that because we've been together long enough now and we're so connected, you know. I mean, which you can hear on the album. We tracked those songs in about 14 days, I think Tom and I were talking about it, over a period of, you know, we'd go in for a few days and we'd have to leave and go on the road, then we'd go back in, you know. So it was a real just kind of get in there and, you know, no frills, you know, lay it down. You know, no one else overdubbing anything except a guy who Ray Kennedy brought in to do a little bit of keyboard stuff on a couple of tracks, you know. So, you know, this album was different in a lot of ways, you know.
Days, because you had several albums in your career that seemed like they took several years to really get worked out and sound like you wanted to, and this one.
That doesn't include, you know, the 14 days, that's just actual tracking. But okay. Then there was the mixing, you know, that Ray did and everything. But Ray was the genius at the board, you know. But anyway, yeah. We're all really looking forward to getting back together and getting out there again, and, you know.
Well, and it seems here last year you were out celebrating the 20th anniversary of Car Wheels, and shortly before that, completely re-recording Sweet Old World. So it looks like you've taken the time to glance back at a couple of your masterpieces. But knowing that those tours obviously are heavy on those albums, and you have to be excited to get out and give the new songs their just due.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, Lucinda, I want to thank you for taking time to share your music, your songs, and this wonderful, urgent new album with the KSUT audience and the Pagosa Folk and Bluegrass Festival, the virtual one taking place this Friday night, and wish you well. Looking forward to talking to you again on Friday and to listening and watching through Facebook Live.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your support, and, you know, thanks to everybody there. And, you know, I have very fond memories of Durango.
Well, we do too, Lucinda. Thank you.